This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yi. Nobody had it tougher during this pandemic than healthcare workers, especially this past year, which saw the country battling another massive wave of infections, which we have been able to get under control. But of course, we are being told to constantly stay vigilant. But you know, the frontliners have been really steadfast in their duties, even in the face of enormous hardship. So in this episode of our short series, where we are reflecting back on 2021, I'm privileged to have joining me on the show today Dr. Kuldeep Kaur, Director of Hospital Sungai Buloh. And we'll be looking at the year that was for healthcare frontliners from the perspective of her hospital, which has been at the forefront of the pandemic since it began. How are you today, Dr. Kuldeep?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
And, you know, how are you doing, and how is the hospital and you know, your entire team at the hospital? How are you all doing now that we're at the end of the year?
Actually, right now, yeah, of course, much better off because cases has reduced, right? Compared to when we were in July, August, right? Where we were actually skyrocketed with the volumes of patients that we receive. And volume was not just the word, but it was also the seriousness of the cases, you know, that we received. And I think that took us for a while, and everyone picked up, and all of us were together working as a team, you know, round the clock, keeping our patients to the best of our ability, safe, and of course, taken care to the best, lah, you know, to the best. I must say, my staffs have worked very hard for the last 2 years, you know, nonstop. Because we were the hospital, for fully COVID hospital since 2020, and we first started on 25th January 2020. And non-stop means, I must say that this was also actually, because it's an infectious disease hospital, it's not something that is very new to us. Throughout history also, you know, healthcare workers have fought back plagues, diseases, pandemics, and everything else that poses a threat to the human life, isn't it? I would say all of us took this challenge in our stride, and we kept an open mind and encouraged discussion with how best to deal with it, you see. I believe my staffs were of a like mind with me, you know, with me, and we all knew the risk that came with being a healthcare worker. This is right from the start. And this is just one of them. But this, of course, is something of a very big scale, which we never expected. And it's unprecedented as well. However, as the pandemic progressed till today, we saw was all the tidal wave of rising number of patients. We got worried and we got stressed, of course, in between. When, you know, cases became a peak to levels that we also never expected, you know, to come. But however, we were still very prepared to take that challenge. And I think we managed to the best of our ability. And our patients and their family members, when they came out of it, of course, they were happy, and they were very grateful for, you know, for taking care of them. And these were all challenges that we had to see, lah. Yeah. Not only in the treatment, in handling the mental health of my staffs as well, because this was something new, and we had to do a lot to take care of the mental health of our staff. We have psychological first aid physically and also through online, you know, so that we allow our staff to come in and share with us the worries and the fears that they have, so that once they actually share with us, they feel better, and we will see how we can help them almost immediately, because this is something when they share with us, we must do it immediately. At least we know they feel better after that, and they could actually work work much better and also go back to the families if they think they are comfortable to go back, because sometimes some of them have so much of fear they don't go back. So then we do provide accommodation as well for them, you know. And we see that they are comfortable to go back, only then we ask them, are you okay? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling this? Then only we will see how and what we can do. You
know? Why were they afraid to go back?
Because the risk of this, when you see these days, there's a lot of social media about, you know, they're worried about the risk and the fears, because something unprecedented, they don't know what they are facing, where they don't know what they're in for when they're going in and facing the patients. In terms of their own work scope per se, like, see, so because of the fears, and so we had to do a lot of CME also, training for them, giving them CME, continuous medical education, so that they understand about the disease, and therefore when they understand and they know that the PPE is actually personal protective equipment is actually safe and will take care of them if they do it correctly, and if they do all this, then definitely they will be safe. And for any reason, like they feel that they're not confident, then they have to come back to us again. So that's why this continuous medical education, this correct usage of the personal protective gears and equipment had to give the confidence to them, you see.
I know you said that as somebody in the healthcare profession, this is what you are trained to do and you are prepared for the hardships. But quite frankly, Dr. Kuldeep, there must have been things that kept you up at night these past 2 years. Tell us about your own mental stress.
Wow. Yes, definitely. Restless. Because there's a lot of things that come up, you know, in the day, right? Every day is not the same, you see. Today, it will be very busy and different sort of, maybe when we read around to see what is happening in the other part of the globe, right? So we get a bit of fierce shudders coming in that, oh, what else I need to prepare, you know, tomorrow, what else I need to do. So that's where the only way to relieve ourselves for this is we really have discussions, you know, teamwork, you know, real good discussions, teamwork, and we come out together with, you know, what we should be doing next, you know. So that's one that kept us going. Discussions were not only about, you know, in terms of the disease per se, what we were handling, the virus and what we should be preparing our hospital with. It was also regarding PPE, it was regarding CME, how to, you know, keep our healthcare staffs going, their mental health. It was like almost every aspect, you know. Sometimes we fear that the time of 24 hours was not enough, you know. So that kept me wake up, you know. They said a whole night to think what's there for me tomorrow now, you know. We don't know what is in store tomorrow again. Maybe there's something else that we need to do, which we have not done yet. Yes, it is true. Sometimes the numbers itself were frightening because we think, hey, space is enough or not now? We have to put in more beds. And, okay, we can't put the beds together as well. Tonya, we have to follow the SOP of 1 meter distance. We have to do differently, things so different. And we have to then slowly but surely decan our non-COVID patients was the first thing that we needed to do because we wanted our non-COVID patients to be treated, stabilized, and then refer specialists to to other hospitals. I think that was another thing because we needed the space, you know. We needed the space.
And when did you begin doing that, decanting the non-COVID patients?
We started decanting the non-COVID patients actually from from early February. Early February, slowly, because we got our first case. Our first case we got was on the 25th of January, 2020. It was travelers from China. And when we got that case, then we thought, okay, hopefully, you know, we were so positive. We thought, hopefully, only this one. We didn't realize that there will be more coming, you know, even though we are prepared, but we think that hopefully stays here only, this much only. But no, It came on and on and on. Then we realized how fast we had to actually stabilize and decant our patients. So we went ward by ward first, then we went floor by floor, and we didn't know time, believe it or not, we had to clear the whole hospital because of the fear of the spread. And we wanted to keep our patients that were non-COVID, right, safe. And also making sure that we have enough space if anything should suddenly surge, right? So being a hospital, infectious disease hospital, actually, we are no strangers to dealing with this infectious disease, because from those days, we have also looked at SARS, MERS-CoV, H1N1, and many of our healthcare staff, including myself, we have experience in dealing with these diseases. Yeah? We've applied what we already knew and from our experience from other countries, and also we prepared our hospital for what has to come.
We'll go for a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll look at how Hospital Sungai Buloh coped with the challenges, especially with the surge of cases earlier this year. I'm speaking to Dr. Kuldeep Kaur, Director of Hospital Sungai Buloh, which has been at the forefront of dealing with the pandemic, in our show, looking back on the year that was for healthcare frontliners. Do stay tuned to Health and Living on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Ik, and my guest, Dr. Kuldeep Kaur, Director of Hospital Sungai Buloh. Right from the beginning of the pandemic last year, Hospital Sungai Buloh was the name you heard about when it came to treating COVID-19 patients. And other hospitals have eventually taken on patients, either becoming full or hybrid COVID-19 hospitals. But, you know, right from the beginning, Hospital Sungai Buloh led the way. And it is, of course, the country's main infectious disease referral center. You know, Dr. Kuldeep, before we move on to looking at the pandemic, tell us a bit about the history of the hospital. It used to be the leprosy center, am I right?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we were quite fortunate because we not only had Sungai Buloh Hospital, right? Sungai Buloh Hospital, as it first started in 2007, operational, built, completed 2006, started operational in 2007. And we are fortunate because around us, we actually have, if you look at, we also have the old hospital, we call it the Leprosy Center, or Pusat Kawalan Kusta Negara. So this leprosy center, those days, it used to house our leprosy patients. Yeah, and also we have a training institute, which is under KKM, which is next to us, that they call it Institute Latihan KKM. So these two facilities became so important to us during this pandemic. So we actually... first, when we saw our hospital filling up so quickly, then we said, oh, where to go next? Then, of course, we have to look at a leprosy center. Then the wards that were actually closed for so long, we had to actually clean up with no time. And actually, we were also quite lucky that we had our Sirchi. Sirchi came in to help us to clean up quite a bit of our wards in a very quick span of time. So I would like to thank some of the NGOs and who came together with us during this time, you know, giving us a helping hand because they realized how much of speed that we need. Yeah? So that, I think, helped us to clean up the wards and also quickly put the beds, you know, to accommodate for those surge in case we don't have enough beds in the main hospital, Sungai Buloh. Then after when we thought, okay, Hospital Sungai Buloh is filling up, we had to look at leprosy center. Then we went on. So the leprosy center also started filling up so quickly. Oh my God, now what to do next? Then we said, okay, we had to look quickly and see our training institute. And we gave ourselves walk. We all walked in a team, had a look at that place, and we said, oh, yeah, this place also can be looked at to put our stable and quarantine some patients, you know, in this place, because it is a training institute. We had to repurpose the place and put the beds together there and made it into wards, you know, wards like a quarantine center, right? Of course, as we were doing this also, we rapidly transformed all these places to wards. And then we also worked closely with Ministry of Health and various bodies like National Institute of Health also to pass through the wealth of the literature that we had during this pandemic to formulate any appropriate infection control protocols. We also recruited a lot of essential staffs like medical officers, nurses, to man all these wards. And at the same time, our occupational safety unit also tirelessly conducted training and retraining sessions for all our staffs. So this went on, and even till today, you know, even till today, because we would like to say that we know what are the important areas where staffs need training now. So even like some staffs who need ICU-based training, we are also getting on to train them. And also infection control practices, we are also making sure that our staffs do not forget that these SOPs are so important, right? So that's where we are till today.
Have you been with Hospital Sungai Buloh since the beginning, Dr. Kuldip?
Yes, right from the beginning, right from day one.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, let's look a little bit at some of the major challenges over the past 2 years, especially the spike and the surge this year. What were some of the things that the hospital was able to implement? You know, we on the part of the public, what we were seeing perhaps was only one side of the picture. You know, it would be interesting to see from your perspective, what was it like and what was the hospital actually able to do?
Actually, major challenges were when we first started, you know, because we had to actually scale down our non-COVID cases. That was the major challenge when we first started, because it's unprecedented, you know, having a case with us and another case coming in, then another case coming in. Of course, the question arises that what happened to the cases that are with us now, the non-COVID cases? So, of course, to scale down these non-COVID cases was the main challenge that we had when we first started. And we had to decan and reduce these cases. And our non-COVID cases are actually operating even till today at a reduced level. We can't have much non-COVID cases in our hospital, even though we can do some amount of clinics because we also want to assist our fellow other hospitals, right? So, because the pandemic was such a scale that it necessitated a radical distribution of resources like manpower and also the facilities, you see, and various form of resources, right, from manpower to facilities to equipment to PPE to drugs to various oxygen later stages, like in July, August, even oxygen, because cases were so serious, right? So high-risk cases, we needed oxygen, right? So when we first started, of course, our initial strength of manpower we needed to improve. Right, we realize that all of them need training because this is unprecedented. So we need to make sure that we give enough CME, continuous medical education, to them, and we train them with proper donning, doffing of PPE, personal protective equipment, and of course resources like PPE was our big challenge at that time. The whole world was, you know, actually running around for the PPE and medical equipment, ventilators, you know. All this was a challenge when we first started. Thanks to the outpouring of generosity from Malaysians from all walks of life, NGOs that came together with us, you know. Sometimes when I talk like this, I feel goose pimples, worry, because the what we faced at the time, you think back, you wouldn't want to be there, you know. So it's like because of the assistance a lot by Ministry of Health Malaysia, by generosity from all Malaysians, because of that, we did not feel much the challenge, even though we were stressed that would the PPE would be enough? Would it be enough? This was the question that arose. Every day we would look at our PAR levels, our numbers. You know, we would worry, is this going to be enough tomorrow, today, tomorrow, another week? What would it run? Will we run out? You know, so these are things, some of the things we're frightened and we were worried because equipment, ventilators, you know. So, thanks to all the CSR from corporate social responsibility. And also at one point of time, hospital itself took some initiative. We wanted to sew our own PPE, you know, also. So, and the other thing is the infra. Is the infra enough, you know, infrastructure of the hospital itself, the wards itself, whether the renovations that required, you know, at this one point, we need to build barriers, you know, all kinds of barriers, you know, to make sure that, you know, that our staff's contact with the patient, at least there is a barrier. Then oxygen supply, the capacity, increased use of oxygen, which happened in this year, somewhere around July, June, July, August, when we had the increased use of oxygen. Then we had to look back at the safety zonings that we did in our hospital. You know, we had to have the clean and the dirty and the green areas for our staffs to rest, to take some breather when they were out of their masks, you know, to eat or to take a deep breath, you know. So these are also things challenges us because we need so much of space for patients, right? So what about the staffs? Where is their green area? So that was also another challenge. They had to like really do walk around the hospital. Every space was like so important, you know. So then we would say, okay, we finish with the main building. Now we'll go on to the leprosy center. Then we will go on to the Institute Latihan. We did the same. At one time, we had to actually also be considerate that Institute Latihan also, when things were better, we had to hand over back to them. Of course, then there was MyApes that came in. Yeah, MyApes, that's a quarantine center. And other hospitals also started coming in to assist as hybrid. As hybrid, plus the universities and the rest, right? So because we wanted to improve our capacity as well, you know, Ministry of Health was looking all over at how to improve the capacity as well for taking in more patients because the numbers were just skyrocketing, yeah? So currently, for Sungai Buloh, for the less severe cases, we place them in leprosy center, and for the critically and clinically challenging cases, we would place them in our hospital Sungai Buloh per se as proper hospital. Yeah.
Would you say that we've seen the worst of it behind us, Dr. Kuldip?
Yes, I would say. I hope not to see any more. I mean, I think the worst that we saw was, I think all of y'all know, right? It was July, August, yeah? It is the worst that, I mean, in the last 2 years, that was the worst time. June started around end of June or somewhere in mid of June, July and August. And that was the time that really took us for a real, I must say, shock and real surprise. And of course, not only surprise, we were ready. In terms of Sungai Buloh, really, we were ready. We were all around and as a team, we stood steadfast and handled our cases to the best, I think with the effort and teamwork of each and everyone, and also with the support, a lot of support from all over, from Ministry of Health, from everyone, that made us strong.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, the disease itself changed. There were variants of concern that would come out, and of course, this wave was brought on because of Delta, right? So, in terms of the hospital's ability to treat the patients, was there anything there that took the team by surprise? What were the challenges in terms of, you know, using the knowledge that you had, and then still not being able to treat the patients who were there? You know, what were some of those challenges?
Well, I think that part, I must say, my clinicians would answer better. I would answer better, but I did not see any I mean, in terms of them coming and asking for any sort of help, because they were really good, because I saw them really very confident and able to handle cases with much confidence. As I always say, being an infectious disease hospital, they were in it. You know, in most of the, if not this scale pandemic, at least the smaller scale kind of got epidemics and smaller scale waves, like Masela, you know. So they were not caught, they were caught to surprise in terms of numbers and seriousness. But at this point of time also, we must say that our vaccinations worked well and helped us to reduce a certain risk. Therefore, you know, we were quite fortunate at certain point of time where the prevention for the COVID, the vaccinations would, did help us to reduce the seriousness of the disease, you know. So that way, we were also quite grateful, you know.
Give us a little glimpse of how your staff have been coping emotionally. And you said you've alluded to the support that has been made available to them. And, you know, when you were having discussions, or perhaps when you were walking around the hospital every day, what were you seeing in the faces of your staff?
Oh, yeah. This is the one that always challenged me when I saw her. When I walked around, yes, I would agree with you that I do see them sometimes very looking down, and they are quite, tired because of many waves that they have went through. However, I do sometimes stand in the center and gather some of them and talk to them, because I feel that was necessary. Give them encouragement that things will be better, not to worry. We are doing well. The most important thing I used to say to them is, all of you are doing well, and I'm sure we can do it together. So these are some of the words and motivational words I used to tell them. And whenever I see them, I used to say that to them, and I gather quite a bit of them, sometimes with the earlier information to call all of them for talk, and not really talk. It's not a sit-down talk. It's like standing, you know, in an open area, and we will actually share our eye-to-eye contact and understand their feelings and get around with them and listen to them, you know, and if they have any other grouses and all that. So this is some of the things we did, and we walked around also, like, especially me, I tried to walk around to see whether my staffs are also practicing the SOP. And I would advise them, you know, you have to avoid crowded areas, you know, you have to take care, like kita jaga kita, you know. So we used to repeat those words, kita jaga kita, you know. So I used to say, please avoid crowded places, please put on your SOPs well when you're in the clinical area. So we used to do this kind of reminder, warn them against any of the SOPs in case they have forgotten. Sometimes not, they want to forget, they're actually tired. They're actually tired. So we know that they're actually doing that because they're tired. It's not they want to forget, you know. So yes, I must say it was a very difficult, the most difficult thing was staffs, I must say, because I fear that they get demotivated, or they get they are worried, but worry about whatever they are facing that maybe they want to share with me or not. But I would just open it up, lah, you know. I would just open it up. And as I said, that because of this psychological first aid that we set up in the hospital, they have someone to go to, you see. So we had counselors, we have psychiatrists who set up online, and we made it anonymous. We made it anonymous. They don't have to mention their name. And they got physical. They can talk to somebody physically. So it's up to them to choose whichever platform they require. But the information that is told comes to me immediately. So we would tackle, or we will handle it almost immediately. I used to tell my counselors or my team of psychological first aid, please come to me almost immediately. Otherwise, it's no point taking it and then wait even 24 hours, because they will be, of course, saying that this kind of system is open, but it's too late, the answer, right? Mm-hmm. So I never waited for any day further. I want to address it as soon as I can.
But their privacy was protected, right?
Yes, of course, definitely. That one, even I didn't want to know who, but I just want to know what exactly the issue, because sometimes can be COVID-free days, their requests, sometimes could be meals, which we always, that is the first thing we always make sure that is there. Any form of their request, you know, so or maybe they want to have some 1 or 2 days break because they want to be with the family, or they want some kind of stay. The issues were like, fear to go back home, you see, and then tired, you know. So all this we were handling in. So what we did is we did like short shifts, you know, shifts so that they get a break, you see. So that way, and we had small numbers working. We don't want too big numbers because we want to make sure they're safe. And when we have small numbers working, that means we have people resting at home as well, you see. So that way we made sure that enough rest was given to them. So that helped us also, because small numbers working also means they're not working so close to each other. The other thing is they are able to get more break, because if the number is big and you handle with small numbers, then some of them are resting, then those who are tired can go back, and then the fresh ones can come in. So we had all kinds of creativity what we did to handle this whole system, because otherwise you cannot last 2 years. You cannot last 2 years.
Yeah.
Not so easy, you know.
So, you know, we did also see and hear heartwarming stories of how healthcare staff, you know, despite how exhausted they were, they continued to be a source of comfort to the patients who were so terrified and were alone, right? Can you share what you saw as well?
Yeah. True. That is something that I must say that my staffs did very well. You know, they gave a lot of comfort to the patients, and we had plenty of praises and a lot of feedbacks, you know, from families and patients that actually gave a lot of, recognition also.
Yeah, I can see how moved you are. Yeah.
You know, emotionally, they were, even though they were so, you know, burnt out, they were, you know, mentally stressed, you know, strains, you know, they were also sometimes affected when they see patients moving on, you know, family members crying in grief and all that. So all these challenges as they face, they also felt it, you see, and with them in that status as well. That is why I mentioned that my occupational safety and health department, they work round the clock, you know, to see that every aspect, right from the safety to psychological first aid, was actually seen in being carried out very strongly in this hospital, I must say, because they are not only working in the vicinity with the patients and then fear of the risk of the contracting the disease, but also seeing patients that they cared for so many days and maybe weeks, and then patients moving on with families all crying and video calls, and so they got moved as well on that. So they were, when they saw all this reality right in front of them, you can imagine how it feels, you know. You know how it actually feels being in that state, you know. Some of them actually, I realized they got into the, when their patient passed away, they got into the room, grieved, and they really, really, really cried, maybe for a while, I think, to, you know, release whatever they needed to release, you know. I've seen pictures of that as well. I myself got moved a lot. I got a lot. I myself sometimes, when I see that, I myself also get into it, like, you know, emotionally. Like, you know, it is quite a real scenario.
And we know that they were the only voice between the patient who was isolated, you know, and their family, and through the phone.
And the families can't come in, you see. The families cannot come in. The most they could do was video call, even for the last words, also video call. And so they're so dependent on our staff, and our staff that gave their best and their whole self to actually manning these patients, and their which is so dear to the, you know, to the families who were actually part, I mean, yeah, so dear to them. So challenges our staff faced was just
tremendous.
Yeah.
And staff aren't just doctors and nurses, right? We forget that a hospital is such a huge team. You have a lot of other staff besides just the healthcare professionals as well.
Yes, those working behind the scene a lot. Yeah, because without them also it's impossible. We have cleaners, we have engineers, we have the admin staffs. All of them have to work so hard also to making sure if there's overtimes to be paid, there is barriers to be made by the engineers, the admin officers had to make sure every aspect have to be prepared on time. Even the kitchen cooked meals, you know, until a whole day. And even the IT officers had to make sure the system is whole system is IT is up all the time, no interruption. Every aspect, there's no one excluded. You can take from wall to wall, roof to floor. No one is excluded. Even the security guards made sure safety was there. You know, nobody's breaking the rule of the zoning of the hospital, red and blue area, you know, clean and dirty. Even the clean cleaners were tirelessly cleaning all the, you know, areas that touch areas, you know, touch areas and the floors, the beds, the ICUs, and then even the nurses had to clean the very aspect wherever near the patient, the nurses had to do it. So it's a tireless all through.
Everyone keeping the hospital going.
Yes, everyone, yes.
And, you know, looking at the bigger picture, Dr. Kuldip, many other hospitals, like you said, around the country and in Klang Valley, you know, began and have been managing a lot of COVID patients as well. You know, from the beginning, how the Hospital Sungai Buloh support the other hospitals, you know, in terms, especially the knowledge and know-how.
Yes, we always stood there. Any every hospital that came in to us to ask for knowledge or support in any way, we always assisted them, and we also showed the know-how to them. And whenever they came in, we take them around with all the SOPs and showed them around how we actually manage our very ill patients, our ward patients, you know, all right from the ED, the PUI center, right from the ED, going up to the wards, to the ICU, and into the forensic department, and how bodies are managed, and till the end. We have always welcomed and taught what we can, and even how to fit the proper fitting of the PPE, the training, the donning, doffing, the even zoning of the hospital, even different areas of the hospital being zoned differently, and also how we screen the patients, you know, how we make sure our staffs are also screened before and out and before they go at home, right? And they also saw how we repurpose a lot. Part of the hospital was repurposed in a very short time. How we fix hot showers all over the hospital so the staffs, as they come out, they must take a shower, and you know, they must, even they go in, they have to go in again, they have to make sure they properly don and off before they go in. All the repurposing that we could right from the emergency department with the plastic sheets so that there's a barrier there, and even to the wards where, you know, we had to fix some areas with exhaust fans so that we can extract the air out, you know, and some of, and the ICUs, of course, with the negative pressure rooms that was done also, even, I mean, in the labs, right? How we actually manage our samples and how the transportation, even cases that came from outside being transported, sent into the hospital, how we actually manage them, which route we follow, a lot. It was actually, we used to do a rundown for them to see how they want, what aspect they want to learn, or any aspect they want, we would share, no issue. Even we did virtually online also, you know. Sometimes my consultants, my specialists, they go online also to teach, yeah. Any request was always done. All the time, we assisted where we can. Yeah.
How would you like people to remember and to take note of Hospital Sungai Buloh's role in fighting this pandemic?
Well, I must say that even though the fight isn't over yet, cases are still in thousands. I must say, don't let your guard down, to the public, to the community out there. Follow all the SOP, get vaccinated, and if you're eligible, get your booster shot. Then this battle can only be won if we all work together as a nation. So Sungai Buloh, message is, how you want public to remember us is we always tell you, please follow the SOP. Only with these messages which we are sharing daily, that only will help all of us together. Sungai Buloh cannot do much magic without all of us coming together, following what is advised, right? So we are here. We are definitely here. We will definitely assist and all the way, but the fight is not over yet. So we hope to get a lot of support from everyone out there to help us fight this battle. And only if we all work together as a nation, then only this battle will be won sooner.
It's not a battle that's yours alone to fight. As cliche as it is, we all have a part to play. And the final message, Dr. Kuldeep, to all the frontliners, to people like your staff, they've had such a difficult 2 years with a lot of other challenges. What's your message to them?
Stay strong. You have been strong. Stay strong. We are going to be there.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kuldeep. I've been speaking to Dr. Kuldeep Kaur, Director of Hospital Sungai Buloh, and she's been taking us behind the scenes to look at how the hospital has been at the forefront of the pandemic and really the key roles that the healthcare frontliners have been playing. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.